happy, like you. Do not talk to my brother. Your old man never mentioned me, little guy? Well, there was a time when we were blood brothers, but I'm guessing he never said a word about... Hell, about the first 20 years of his life, probably. You barely knew who he was. And then he died in some goddamn cave, and nobody even bothered to go get his body? What the hell kind of people are you? Do not talk to my brother, you psychotic dick! There was a split second of silence. A stalemate, where all they heard was the wind. And then Spock sneezed. Stan turned to the bubble under the rug and hooted with pleasure. Classic, he said. He grabbed the dog, bound him up in the rug, and stuck him under one arm. Time for chicken shit's bath, he said, and gestured out to the frozen lake. Hope he don't mind cold water. He bounced the sharp point of the poker on the floor like it was a walking stick. Do not follow me, big sister, he told Zoe, his eyes crawling over her body once more. Or you'll get more action than you can handle. Once he'd gone, she and Jonah sat on the couch, stunned. After a moment, she took his face in her hands so she'd know he was listening. I need to go out there, she said, to get the dogs back. And I need you to stay here. Okay, Jonah? I need to hear you say okay. Can you say okay for me? And mean it? Jonah wriggled until Zoe let go of his face, then scrunched his eyebrows down, like a teacher had told him to put on his thinking cap. Okay. I won't go outside, he said. Thank you, said Zoe. But you can't go either. That man doesn't fight fair, so we're not going to fight, right? You said. How about if I just go for 5 minutes? No, Zoe. Okay, how about 2 minutes? She was trying to calm him down by teasing him a bit, negotiating the way he always did. No, Zoe, no minutes. I want you here. He stopped and fished around for words. Even I get scared sometimes. Zoe knew if she went outside, Jonah would follow her, and she couldn't take the chance. So she did the unheroic thing, which she hated herself for. She sat on the couch with her arm around her brother and made certain he never looked out the window behind them. It wasn't as hard to distract him as she thought it would be. They found the wicker basket with Betty's knitting supplies, and Jonah started fixing the hole at the top of Zoe's hat. For a while, the only sound in the room was the clicking of needles, though at one point, Jonah paused to scold her. You really should take better care of your things. Zoe tried not to look out the window either. She didn't look when she heard Stan walk past them toward the lake, his boots crunching over the snow and Spock whimpering inside the rug. She didn't look when Jonah began rubbing his eyes and said what he always said when his body was shutting down from too much stimulation and he was seesawing on the edge of sleep. I'm not tired. My eyes just hurt. She didn't even look when he put down the needles and fell asleep with his head in her lap. But then she heard Stan hacking at the ice on the lake with the poker, trying to stab his way down to the water. And that's when she looked. He was making a hole to drown the dogs in. There were binoculars on the coffee table. Zoe grabbed them. The night was black and starless. A void. The world had just been shut off. Stan was working by the light of his truck's headlights. He struggled to hold Spock as he chipped deeper and deeper. For a second, the dog managed to squirm out of Stan's arms, but he couldn't move fast enough on the ice. He slipped and slid desperately until Stan grabbed him by the scruff of his neck and threw him into the hole. Then Stan pushed Spock's head under the water with his foot. When he was sure the dog couldn't climb out, he loped back to his truck for Uhura. For the next few moments, he didn't see what Zoe saw. He didn't see the lake begin to glow, gradually at first, and then, though it made no sense, brighter and brighter, until it looked like the ice covered not water, but fire. And he didn't see the figure at the farthest edge of the lake moving toward them, moving across the ice, moving calmly, yes, but as fast as a galloping horse. Zoe was at the window now, with no memory of having stood up and walked toward it. It was the window, she realized later, that made it possible for her to watch all this without thinking she'd lost her mind. Not just because the pane of glass separated her from everything happening out there, but because it was like a screen and, if she was going to be honest, she'd watched a lot of crazy stuff on TV. She walked out of the living room, out of the house. It was like she was being pulled by a rope. Stan slammed the door of his truck. He had Uhura locked under his arm. It was her turn for a bath. And he'd clamped her mouth shut with one hand. The dog was seething but helpless. Zoe had the binoculars trained on Stan when he turned back toward the lake and saw it blazing in the darkness. And when he first noticed the figure shooting toward him, covering hundreds of feet in an instant. Stan was terrified. But, almost immediately, his face turned cocky and hateful again, as if he believed stupidity could protect him from anything.
"Now what in the hell is all this shit?"
he said. Stan had hardly gotten the last word out before the figure was on him. He dropped Uhura so he could defend himself. The dog ran to Zoe, who was standing off in the darkness, and leaped into her arms. Stan tried to look tough and raised his fists. Instead, he just looked ridiculous. He hopped around the stranger like an old-timey boxer. The stranger was X, though Zoe wouldn't call him that for days. X was so pale that his face seemed to give off a light all its own. From a distance, she couldn't even guess at his age, though she could see he had beautiful long hair that was actually messy and uncared for, not just styled to look that way. He was wearing a long coat, deep blue with an iridescent shimmer like a soap bubble. He didn't have a hat or gloves or a scarf, but the cold seemed not to touch him anyway. His face had a thin sheen of sweat, as if he were feverish. X didn't say a word. He took Stan by the coat and hurled him onto the glowing ice. He didn't do it in anger. He didn't do it like an action hero. He just did it like it had to be done. He never once looked at Zoe, but she could tell that he knew she was there. Stan skidded across the frozen lake, toward the hole he had made. He came to a stop, one side of his face clawed red by the ice. In a flash, X stood over him. Stan looked up, trying to understand what was happening, and how he'd lost control of the situation.
"I don't know what you want, super freak," he said, "but whatever it is, you ain't getting it. This is my party."
X still didn't speak. It was clear to Zoe that he wasn't going to bother until somebody said something worth responding to. X walked toward the hole and pulled out Spock. The dog was wet and shivering, like he'd just been born, but he warmed instantly in X's arms. Then Spock did something he'd only ever done to Jonah and her. He licked X's cheek. X patted his head tentatively, as if he wasn't sure how. It was a tiny gesture, but because of all the pain and weirdness of the last few hours, it made Zoe's eyes fill with tears. She dropped the binoculars into the snow and went closer. Somehow, she wasn't afraid. She wanted X to see her. Who was he? Why was he here? Why wouldn't he look at her? While X was comforting Spock,
Stan tried to stand. X merely shook his head no, and Stan's feet went out from under him. He fell back onto the ice. X removed his coat. Beneath it, he wore a rough, short-sleeved shirt, though, to be honest, all Zoe saw were his arms. They were ropey with muscles and covered with primitive tattoos of, among other things, animals she didn't recognize. He wrapped Spock in his coat and set him down gently. The coat shimmered in the darkness, like a dying fire. He turned to Stan, who was still clinging absurdly to the idea that he could talk his way out of this.
"Okay, super freak," Stan said. "Tell me what you want and maybe you can have it. I'm a reasonably reasonable person."
What happened next was like a ritual from some secret society in the woods, or from the Middle Ages, maybe. A trial where everybody knows ahead of time that the verdict will be guilty. X was shaking, but everything he did calmly and methodically. He seemed to regret that he'd been sent to the lake, and that was the feeling Zoe got, that he'd been sent here, maybe even forced to come. He still hadn't looked at her, but the way these thoughts suddenly took root in her head, not as theories or guesses, but as facts, as certainties, made her think that he'd somehow put them there himself. How was that possible? Stan was on his knees now, struggling again to stand. X put a hand on his shoulder, and in an instant Stan was immobile, conscious, but frozen still. X walked a few feet, turned his back to Stan, and pulled off his shirt. His shoulders were broad, his waist slim as a swimmer's. Unlike the bruised skin of his face, X's back was smooth and untroubled. A blank canvas. It occurred to Zoe that someone, or something, had spared it. And for a reason. She honestly didn't know if she came up with this idea herself, or if he gave it to her. X spread his arms wide, his shoulder blades flashed in the darkness, and his back became broader still. Zoe couldn't help it. She took a photo to put on Instagram later. X seemed to be summoning something up. He let out a sharp cry, like he was trying to force a sickness out of his system. Then his back came alive with images. His skin became a screen. What played on X's back looked almost like a home movie. Jittery, dizzying, chaotic. And unearthly somehow. She and Stan watched, transfixed. Stan remained immobile. It was as if he were bound and tied by the air itself. Zoe stood in the dark not far away. They watched in shock, and then horror, each for their own reasons. Suddenly, it occurred to Zoe that Jonah might have woken up, that he might be watching from the living room. Her eyes flew to the house. The windows were black. Her brother might have been standing at one of them. There was no way to tell. Zoe turned back to the movie. Bert and Betty were in it. They were cowering in the living room in the very same capital A by the lake. They were rigid with fear. Someone was circling them. Someone who'd burst into their home. Zoe couldn't see much of the intruder's face. Just a sliver of it, like a crescent moon. Still, she recognized the ugly buzz cut and the pitted skin. She saw the intruder walk to the fireplace, saw him hoist the lethal-looking poker and test its weight in his hand. Stan tore his eyes away from X's back, unable to look at what he had done. He turned to the house, hoping for relief. X expected this. He extended his palm toward the long, sloping roof of the A-frame, and in an instant the images were flashing there, too. Stan was shocked. He cast his eyes down. X knelt, pressing his hand to the ice. The orange glow disappeared, and for a second the world was black. Then suddenly the movie was playing beneath them, all around them. The figures giant and distorted, the voices booming. Zoe couldn't understand what anyone was saying. She couldn't even figure out where the sound was coming from, though it was everywhere now. But she could see that Stan, Bert, and Betty were screaming. One of them in anger, two of them in fear. Then suddenly, Uhura was in the movie, trying to protect Bert and Betty. She was barking wildly, like she had when Stan's truck pulled up. Spock, amazingly, was howling too. In the movie, Betty took Bert's hand and pulled him toward the door, toward safety. Bert looked bewildered, childlike. As Betty tried to rush him outside, he stopped, as if he had all the time in the world, and took a peppermint out of a dish on the coffee table. They burst outdoors just a few seconds ahead of Stan. Seeing them escape even for a moment made Zoe's heart leap. She didn't know why. She knew there was only one possible ending. Stan went after them, clutching the poker. Bert and Betty stumbled to their car, and Betty started the engine, but the tires spun uselessly in the snow. By the time they'd gone 100 yards, Stan was close behind, shouting and gesturing savagely with the weapon. The car struck a tree. Zoe watched as Stan yanked Bert and Betty out of the car and went after them with the poker. She saw Betty in the snow. She saw Bert crying like a kid. She saw the dogs snap their jaws at Stan's legs, and she saw the psycho snap back at them sarcastically and then kick them in the stomach. She saw the poker flash up and down. Zoe saw Betty die. She died trying to shield Bert's body with her own. Then Zoe saw Bert die. He died sobbing over Betty. He died hiding his face behind his hands. He died pleading over and over in a high, terrified voice. "Give me a break. I'm just an old codger. Give me a break. Give me a break. Give me a break." Stan slid the Wallace's bodies, one after the other, into the lake. When Zoe realized what she was seeing, when the evil of it really sunk its long fingernails into her, she looked back at the house, praying again that Jonah was still asleep. Then she fell on her knees. She held Uhura to her chest, and she threw up into the snow until her throat was on fire. By the time Zoe could stand, X had let his arms fall to his sides and tugged his shirt back over his head. The movie had sputtered to a stop. The lake glowed fiercely once more. X, looking sickly and spent, reached down and dragged Stan closer to the hole in the ice. Stan hadn't said a word while they watched the killings, but Zoe could see from his expression that something had been building inside him. It wasn't guilt or sorrow, or even fear anymore. It was rage. "This the part where I'm supposed to say I'm sorry and so forth?" he shouted at X. "Well, don't hold your breath, super freak. Them people were old as dirt. There was no damn use to anybody." X still hadn't spoken. He looked down at Stan patiently, as if he knew everything he would say before he ran out of words. Stan started up again, more quietly this time.
"Look it," he said. "I wasn't aiming to hurt them. Didn't even bring a weapon. I was just looking to borrow one or two valuables. I expected them to be all meek and mild because their brains were applesauce, correct?" "Yeah, I knew about that. I was real meticulous about that robbery. Took me near about a month to plan it. I mean, I really did my homework. Which is ironical because when I was in high school, never did my homework." In his terror, Stan had begun to babble. "Anyway," he said, "the whole thing could have been a pleasant experience for everybody involved, relatively speaking. But that old broad was a fighter.
She was trying to keep me away from her man, scratching at my eyeballs and whatnot. Can't say I predicted that. So things got more, contentious and acrimonious than I planned on. Joke is, I didn't find anything worth a shit in that place. Been out here 2 or 3 times since and still ain't found where they hid their damn money. Stan spat noisily on the ground.
All right, he said. I got nothing else to say. Except that you gotta hate God if you're really fixing to drown me.
And that was the thing that made X speak. His voice was deep, but scratchy from lack of use. Zoe couldn't tell what country he was from, or even what century.
Mark me well,
X said, then stopped to clear his throat and wipe the sweat from his forehead. No one respects God's love more than those of us damned to the lowlands, for we know what it means to live without it. He took Stan by the collar. Now you will, too. He bent down and, though he looked too tired now to manage it, lifted Stan into the air. Stan fought him, clung to his neck, scratched at his face. X winced and, with what seemed like his last bit of strength, pushed Stan into the jagged hole in the ice. Then he paused, turned, and looked straight at Zoe. His eyes were overwhelming. A wave rose inside Zoe's chest. X seemed to be asking her a silent question. She thought maybe he wanted her permission to end Stan's life. Stan hadn't even been aware that Zoe was standing there. He saw her now, and gave her a sickening smile.
Call him off, girlie, he begged. Please.
Hell, I knew your father.
X reddened, furious that Stan would dare to address Zoe.
Stop your mouth, he told him, or I will plug it with my fist.
X looked to Zoe again, and again she was shaken by the force of the connection. His eyes still held a question, but it wasn't what she thought it was. She could see that now. He had no intention of sparing Stan, and wasn't looking for her opinion. So what was he asking her then? It came to her. Somehow X knew how much she had loved Bert and Betty. Somehow he knew that a lot of what was good and right about her was their doing, and that her hatred for Stan was like a fever under her skin. He was asking if she wanted to kill him herself. Zoe felt a surge of something she couldn't name. She didn't even know if it was pain or relief, but it electrified her. She walked across the ice toward X and Stan. Stan was writhing spastically in the lake. The freezing water lapped into his horrible mouth. It was what he deserved, Zoe knew. She walked as fast as she could without sliding sideways, planting her feet hard on the ice. She gained speed with every step. X never stopped looking at her, never stopped holding her with his eyes. Zoe still didn't know what she was feeling, not exactly. She searched around in her mind for the word and, though it didn't seem possible, she could feel X inside her brain looking for it too. They found the word in the same instant. It was not rage or vengeance. It was mercy. X's eyes flashed with surprise. He pivoted away from Zoe and hurriedly put his boot on the top of Stan's head, just as Stan had done to Spock. He was about to push him under when Zoe hurled herself at him. X was exhausted. Zoe was fierce. She knocked him onto the ice before his boot came down. 3. She didn't expect X to fall, but his body collapsed under her, and they went sprawling onto the lake. For half a second, they lay entangled. His skin smelled of pine and campfire smoke. Zoe waited for him to spring up again, but he lay on his back,
twitching with pain. He was more feverish than she'd realized. She got to her feet and turned to Stan, who was sobbing in the water, his skin turning blue-gray. The thought of touching him repulsed her. But it wasn't right that he'd die that way, no matter what he'd done. She reached out with both hands and helped him out of the water. He stood in front of her, shivering, his clothes soaked against his body. He looked scrawny and pathetic, like something that'd been pulled out of its shell.
"Hallelujah, girlie," he said. "Your daddy'd be proud."
It felt disgusting to be thanked by him. Zoe said nothing. She just watched as he raced for his truck, the pale soles of his boots shining as he ran. The engine coughed but wouldn't start. Zoe knew what an engine sounded like when it wanted to cooperate. This one just wanted to be left in peace. After 30 full seconds of profanity, in which Stan strung together curses that she was pretty sure had never been strung together before, he got out of the truck, pulled a blanket from the back, and ran into the trees like an animal. X sat up on the ice. She expected him to be in a rage, but he just stared at her, mournful and confused.
"What have you done?"
he said. Zoe didn't answer. She didn't really know what she'd done, other than act on instinct. X turned to track Stan's progress into the woods. "Don't go after him," Zoe said. They were the first words she ever said to him, and, though she often encased even the most sincere statements in sarcasm, she dropped her guard now. "Please. It's wrong." X weighed her words.
"Yet if I do not go after him," he said, "someone will surely come after me."
But still he didn't move. He lingered on the ice with Zoe, listening to branches break as Stan scurried up the hills in the dark. Why wasn't X chasing him, Zoe wondered. Why was he doing what she wanted? Why would he care what she wanted? "If you kill him, you're as bad as he is," she said. "It's not our job to punish people." X lowered his head.
"Perhaps it is not yours," he said.
Zoe stumbled back to Bert and Betty's house to retrieve Jonah, pausing just long enough to take a picture of the license plate on Stan's diseased-looking truck. Spock and Uhura followed her. X did, too. Zoe didn't look back, but she could hear him wading through the snow behind her. He didn't follow her inside. He stayed on the porch out of respect. Or shyness, maybe. He hushed the dogs when they whimpered, so he must have known somehow that Jonah was sleeping. Spock and Uhura lifted their heads, and eventually X figured out that they wanted to be scratched under their chins. He knelt and rubbed them cautiously and whispered their names. Zoe set a candle on the windowsill and watched for a long moment. Jonah was still lying on the couch. He appeared to have slept through the chaos. But when Zoe went to lift him, his body seemed tense, not the floppy mass of bread dough it should have been. Holding Jonah made Zoe's arms ache. She'd never get him home this way. Still, she couldn't bear the thought of rousing him and forcing him to march back through the woods. He deserved to wake up in his bed, the nightmare over, and his Nerf guns and stomp rockets right where he left them. She wanted innocence and forgetting for Jonah, all the more because she couldn't have them for herself. She laid him on the couch again, her palm cradling the back of his head like he was a newborn. Then she stood and waited for a solution to appear out of the ether. Through the windows, she saw X sitting with the dogs on his lap. His face was damp with sweat, and the snow on his coat was turning translucent as it melted. Spock nipped at him playfully, which seemed to startle him. Had he never played with dogs before? At last he understood what Spock wanted. He pretended his hands were birds, and teased the dog by making them swoop and dive just beyond his reach. X must have known he was being watched. He looked back at Zoe through the glass. She was struck again by how sick he'd become. but he seemed not to be asking for help, but to be offering it. Did he have some plan for getting her and her brother back to their house? Because that was the only thing in the world Zoe wanted right now. She met X's eyes. She didn't move. She didn't so much as mouth a word. But he nodded. After that, she saw flashes of sky in what seemed like a video of the trees blurring by on fast forward. X was dizzy and staggering and in the grip of some sickness that Zoe had never seen. But he carried them home. Even in the darkness, Zoe could see that the snow in the driveway was untouched, and her heart sank at the sight of it. Her mother hadn't made it back yet. She was desperate to see her, but it was just as well that she wasn't home. Zoe couldn't have explained the strange figure who had delivered them and who, after refusing water, shelter, gloves, a hat, a blanket, and even veggie jerky, but then who said yes to veggie jerky, was now retreating in the direction of the woods. She looked out at X one last time. She saw him stagger a few feet, then fall to one knee in the snow. She made herself turn away. Zoe opened the door of the house, a difficult maneuver now that Jonah was sleeping in her arms. She found the post-it note on the fridge where her mother kept all the contact information for the police, and, holding it between her teeth, struggled up the staircase with her brother. Jonah's bed was small and shaped like a ladybug. When Zoe finally lowered him onto it, he rolled onto his side without waking and began drooling onto the pillow. She sat on the floor by Jonah's bed with her phone and emailed the picture of Stan's license plate to the police, along with a message that read, "This truck belongs to the man who killed Bert and Betty Wallace, with the poker from their fireplace. His name is Stan something. His truck is still at their house. He's maybe 45 plus, about 6 feet tall. Skinny. Buzz cut. Messed up eyebrow. You're welcome." Once she'd sent the email, she scrolled through the clump of text that had finally broken through. There were some from Dallas, who was full-on stoked from rocking out in the blizzard. Val, who had missed it entirely because she was napping. And her mother, who was just generally frantic. Part of Zoe felt abandoned by her mom, but she couldn't help but smile as she read her stream of messages. "Road's horrific. Can't even get out of grocery store. So sorry, Zoe. Still horrific. Still sorry. Don't let Jay eat cereal before bed. Try gluten-free waffle. Arg! Radio says snow plows aren't even going out tonight. No way to get up mountain. Still in grocery store. We'll live in grocery store forever, eating chemicals and pesticides, like real American. Are you okay? You know what? If Jay wants cereal, he can have it. OMG, Rufus just rescued me in his big-ass van like a knight. No, he's not in love with me. I heard that. I'm going to crash on his couch. Tell me you're okay? Can't sleep. Worrying about you. Did Jay want cereal? Zoe sat pondering what to text back. We're okay, she wrote finally. More later. I gave Jonah some Pringles dipped in cake frosting. Is that cool? Rufus is obsessed with you. Go to sleep now. XO. Zoe went on Snapchat and Instagram for a while, hoping that life might start to seem normal again. It didn't. How could it? After Stan and X and the hole in the ice? She crossed the hall to her room and stood, tired and unsteady, in the doorway. On the wall at the foot of her bed there was a photo of her and her dad from one of their caving trips. They were wearing matching one-piece flight suits, which they'd bought at the Army, Navy, and Whitefish for $17 apiece. Zoe had a battery-powered headlamp. Her father, being a dork, used an old-fashioned carbide lamp that looked like a miniature blowtorch. In the photo, he had a wide, geeky smile and some pretty crazy bedhead. Her dad had always had bedhead. He used to call it hair salad. Zoe heard Stan's voice spreading like dye in her brain.
You barely knew who he was. And then he died in some goddamn cave? And nobody even bothered to go get his body? What the hell kind of people are you?
The words raced around her mind, like birds chasing one another. Was it her fault that she hadn't known her father better? He was never around. Zoe'd had no choice but to rely more and more on her mom. Her mother had dropped out of medical school and worked multiple jobs to support the family while Zoe's dad came and went. She'd thrown everything she had into being a mom, and she raised the kids to be resilient and strong. When Zoe was a baby, her mother dressed her in onesies that said hero and protagonist. Her father's love might have been like a candle or a lantern, but her mom's was better. It never went out. Zoe was too tired to think anymore, even if it was only 9:30. She stripped off her clothes for bed. Her whole body felt dirty and sore. Her legs were stubbly, her breath was horrendous, her shoulders were tender from where her bra straps had dug into her skin. She should have showered, brushed her teeth, something. But she couldn't do even one more thing today. She fell headlong into bed, like someone who'd been shot. Her mother finally made it home in the middle of the night. Zoe heard the front door whoosh open in her sleep. She felt relief wash through her, and immediately had a dream in which she was a child again, laying her head on her mother's lap. She wanted to talk to her mom, but couldn't pull herself out of sleep. When she awoke again, hours later, it was because she heard voices, men's voices, rising up through the floor. She tried to shut them out. She refused to open her eyes. She tried to grab onto the dream she'd been having, but couldn't quite catch its tail. There was music downstairs now, but it was weirdly out of place. Buddhist chanting set to keyboards, acoustic guitars, and finger cymbals. That meant her mom was trying to calm everybody down, or she was trying to annoy them so much that they'd leave. Zoe was wedged up against the wall. At some point in the night, Jonah had crawled in with her. He always started from the foot of the bed and tunneled up under the sheets like a gopher. She could feel the heat of his body against her back. She could feel his tiny toes against her leg. The front door slammed. Somebody had gone outside for a cigarette. Zoe heard him coughing and crunching around in the snow. She smelled the smoke slither in through her window. The man pulled open the door again, so hard that it slammed against the side of the house, and came back in without bothering to knock the snow off his boots. Zoe turned onto her back. Pain shot up her neck in sparks. Soon the voices were impossible to ignore. They were squabbling like pigeons. Zoe was never going to fall back asleep. What the hell was going on? She drew in a long breath and released it slowly. She finally opened her eyes. It was still night. That was a surprise. She'd assumed it would be morning. There was no moon, no wind. The snow gave off a faint blue light, and the pines stood mysterious and still, as if they'd just been talking to one another. Zoe took her phone from where it was charging on the windowsill. It was 3 a.m. She tapped the flashlight app and swept the room with it. Her mother must have been in and out because there were plates, glasses, and bowls huddled on the floor, like a ruined city. Zoe had no memory of any of it. There was red pepper, aloe leaves, sprigs of mint, a bowl of water with some yellowish tincture suspended in it like a cloud. It looked like either a frostbite remedy or a voodoo ceremony. Nearby, there was a fat paperback lying open on a chair, a time-travel romance about a guy in a kilt. Its pages fluttered like overgrown grass in the wind. Her mother must have sat watching them for hours. She had also bandaged the cut on Zoe's forehead. She'd been in med school just long enough to learn to administer excellent first aid. Zoe shone the flashlight over Jonah. His cheeks, which had been chapped by the wind, were glistening with aloe now, and his fingertips had been individually wrapped. For a moment, the light came too close to his eyes. He winced but kept on sleeping. One thing about her brother, he slept fiercely. He would sweat through his t-shirts. He was wearing one now that said, "I do my own stunts," and make such an indignant harumph of an expression that it always cracked her up. What was he mad at? Who was he fighting or protecting in his dreams? As Zoe shifted in bed, she felt something tug at her leg. She peeled back the comforter and sheet. Jonah must have been afraid that she'd sneak out of the room without telling him, so, as a kind of alarm system, he had tied a skateboard to her ankle with yarn. When he was scared, he hated waking up alone. It made him feel wobbly inside, he said. Gazing down at her brother now, Zoe felt competing waves of guilt and relief and fear and love. He was curled against her in a crescent like a baby deer. "Look at him," she thought. She untied the skateboard from her ankle and tied it to his own. "Tag. You're it." Downstairs, one of the men broke a glass on the countertop. It nearly woke Jonah. Zoe flushed with anger and shot off a text to her mother. It only said, "Who?" The moment she sent it, she heard her mother push her chair back from the kitchen table and bound up the stairs. After everything that had happened in the blizzard, the sound of her mother rushing to her was so comforting that Zoe's anger dissipated in an instant and, before she even realized she was in danger of it, she started to cry. Her mother pushed open the door of the bedroom and then closed it behind her, so that the wedge of light made the trophies along the wall gleam briefly and then go out. Zoe didn't want her mother to know how upset she was. She did what she always did in moments of uncertainty. She blurted something random. "So, you back from the store?" Her mother laughed. "I am," she said. "Anything happen around here?" One of the things that Zoe loved most about her mother was that the woman understood her jokes even when they were totally bizarre. Very often, they were the only ones in the room laughing while everyone else fidgeted uncomfortably. Not even her father, when he was alive and when he was around, had really understood Zoe's sense of humor. "There's a stowaway in here with me," Zoe said, nodding toward Jonah. "We have to whisper." "I can do that," her mother said. She came to kneel by the bed. Zoe could just barely make out the outline of her mom's face in the darkness. Neither of them spoke. The lightness of the moment drained away. "Is Jonah gonna be okay?" said Zoe. "Frostbite-wise, yes, he'll be fine," her mother said. "But he seems pretty traumatized by whatever you went through." She paused, and her voice softened. "Can you tell me what happened?" Zoe searched for an answer that would sound remotely sane. Downstairs, one of the men turned off the Eastern chanting. The other men let out grunts of relief and applauded. "Who's down there?" said Zoe. "That's not important right now," her mother said. "But apparently they're not Buddhists." She waited for Zoe to answer the question still hovering in the air. "Talk to me," she said. Zoe's instinct was always to tell her mother everything, and she wished she could pour out every crazy, hallucinogenic detail about the lake glowing orange, about the movie of Stan's sins, about X. But what could she say about him? What did she even know apart from the fact that he radiated loneliness and that she'd been drawn to him? She fought back the image of his face. She knew if she said too much, she'd make no sense at all. "The short version," Zoe said, "is that Jonah and the dogs went in the woods, and I let them." Her mother let a few moments go by, like she was waiting for a train to pass. "Okay, look, I'm sorry to be pushy," she said. but I'm going to need a slightly longer version.
I can't, Mom, Zoe said.
Not yet.
Zoe,
I mean, the longer version is that I suck and I almost got him killed.
Zoe, stop. Don't do that to yourself.
All I keep thinking is that when Jonah wakes up, he's going to look at me like I let him down. And I did. I let the little bug down.
She shouldn't have spoken at all. She began sobbing in that awful, hiccupy way.
Her mother reached over Jonah to touch her face, but had trouble locating it in the darkness.
I'm trying to stroke your cheek sweetly, she said.
Is this your cheek? Am I stroking it sweetly?
No, that's my forehead, Zoe said.
And that is my nose.
Okay, well, picture me stroking your cheek, her mother said.
I'm picturing it, Zoe said,
and laughed despite herself as her mother's hand groped around blindly.
Now stop it, Helen Keller. Please, that's my ear.
Zoe, her mother said, your brother loves you like a crazy person, and that will never, ever change. The kid tied a skateboard around your leg.
Zoe started to say something but was interrupted by a commotion downstairs.
She and her mother listened as one of the men stood, his chair screeching against the floor, and said,
"Enough of this horseshit, boys."
They listened to the heavy tread of the man's boots coming up the stairs. Zoe's mother didn't allow shoes in the house, so the noise sounded almost like violence.
"I wish I could give you more time," her mom said.
"But I can't, baby. You're going to have to tell your story, because the police are here." Zoe's mother shooed the cop out of the bedroom immediately and asked Zoe to come downstairs when she was ready. Zoe hadn't seen the police since her father died, and knowing they were in the house stirred some prickly memories. The police were the ones who'd left her dad's body in the cave. The cop who had just banged on Zoe's door, Chief Baldino, had decided it was too dangerous to go get it. Zoe slipped out of bed, careful not to wake Jonah, and dressed in the dark. Minutes later, she padded down the stairs and peeked out at the kitchen table, where her mother sat with Baldino and two of his troopers. Baldino was big, blustery, unpleasant, and actually bald. Just now, he was scratching like a dog at a scaly red rash below the collar of his shirt. The chief sat next to a skinny young trooper whose last name was Mayers. Zoe remembered him being slightly dopey, but harmless. The chief obviously detested him. The third cop at the table was Sergeant Vilkomerson. He was the only one who'd ever bothered to tell the Bissells his first name. It was Brian, and the only one to hug them at her dad's funeral service in town. When Zoe entered the kitchen, Vilkomerson stood and pulled out a chair for her. Unlike Baldino and Mayers, he'd taken his shoes off out of respect for the rules of the house, which were posted at every door. Officer Mayers had been asking Zoe's mom boring background questions about Zoe, where she went to school and if she had any hobbies. Zoe's mom had been stalling so Zoe could get dressed and think through what she wanted to say. Her mother had her laptop in front of her on the table. It was open, for all to see, to a page entitled, "The Rights of Minors During Police Questioning." Zoe loved her mother's feistiness and felt proud that she'd inherited it. Her mom worked 6 days a week managing a dumpy spa called Piping Hot Springs.
"Relax and rejuvenate in one of our healing pools."
She also worked as a hostess at a great cafe called Lula's in Whitefish, and directed traffic on a road crew whenever they repaved Route 93. Even so, Zoe knew her family was always short on cash. She knew her mom felt like she was running down a train track, just a couple of steps ahead of the train. Zoe's mother told Officer Mayers that Zoe's hobby was collecting trophies, which seemed to impress him. The truth was that Zoe literally collected trophies. She thought they were ugly and ridiculous and awesome, so she bought them at yard sales and thrift stores.
If you went into her room and didn't know any better, you'd be amazed that one girl could be so good at swimming, public speaking, archery, macrame, ballooning, and raising livestock. Zoe's mom began rambling magnificently now. She described hobbies of Zoe's that were entirely made up. One of her supposed collections, 32 of the 50 official state spoons, so piqued Mayers' interest that Zoe was afraid that he'd ask to see it. Zoe sat down next to her mother. "I am all about state spoons," she told Mayers. "I'm starting to worry that I'm too into them." Zoe's mom bit her lip and kicked Zoe gently under the table.
"Yeah, okay,"
Chief Baldino said gruffly.
"I think we're done with the icebreakers."
He signaled to Mayers that he'd be taking over the interrogation since Mayers clearly wasn't up to it. Zoe's mom shot her familiar look, the look that said, "Alphas are the worst." Mayers shrank in his chair, looking hurt. Baldino slid a piece of paper across the table to Zoe.
"Can you confirm that you sent this email to us at 9:15 last night?" he said.
Zoe glanced down. When she looked back up at Baldino, all she saw was the man who had abandoned her dad's body. "Yes, I sent that email," she said, "which is why it has my name on it." Baldino put on reading glasses that seemed weirdly dainty for such a fat, overstuffed armchair of a man, and read the email aloud. Zoe's mom grimaced when she heard the name Stan. If her dad had known him way back when, in Virginia, her mother must have too. And again when Baldino got to the sarcastic final sentence, "You're welcome."
"I assume those are your words," said Baldino, "since they have your name on them?"
"Yes," said Zoe.
"So how about you tell us how you know all this?"
Zoe's mom made a show of scrolling down the webpage, then nodded to her. Zoe knew she couldn't tell the whole truth, but she could at least tell nothing but the truth. "Jonah and I were trying to find the dogs," she said. She glanced at Officer Mayers, who had been sullenly taking notes ever since he'd been removed from power, and then at Sergeant Vilkemerson, who gave her an encouraging, "you're doing good" sort of nod. Baldino folded his arms tightly across his chest and puffed his stomach out so far that he looked 7 or 8 months pregnant. "We got caught in the blizzard," Zoe said. "We went to Bert and Betty's place to warm up. We used to stay there all the time." The memory was so painful that she couldn't help but add, "After my father died, and you guys refused to go get his body." Baldino was unfazed by the remark, but everybody else shifted unhappily in their chairs. Zoe's mom leaned over and whispered, "Don't, honey. That's not fair." Zoe pulled away from her, surprised. "How is that not fair?" she said. Baldino interrupted before her mother could answer.
"So you encountered Stan Mangold at the Wallace's former residence?"
"Yes, if that's his last name. He called himself Stan the Man." "My God," said Zoe's mom. She even recognized the nickname.
"And how exactly do you know that Mr. Mangold is responsible for the deaths of Bertram and Elizabeth Wallace?"
"I saw..." Zoe began, then broke off immediately. She'd been about to say, "I saw him do it." That would have gone over well. "I saw it in a movie on the back of a super hot guy."
"You saw what, exactly?" said Baldino.
"I saw how he bragged about it," she said. "And I saw the poker he killed them with. He thought Bert and Betty were rich. He was still trying to figure out where they hid their money. But they didn't have any money. And now their bodies are in the lake." Her voice was shaking.
"Zoe," said Baldino, "did you and your brother see anyone other than Stan Mangold while you were out at the lake? Anybody you knew? Anybody you didn't know? Anybody at all? I want you to think carefully about your answer, because we're going to write it down."
At this, Officer Mayers looked up at his boss as if to say,
Are you talking about me?
Baldino rolled his eyes and said,
Yes, Stuart. Whatever she says, write it down.
Everyone looked at Zoe, waiting. X's face flashed into her head. She felt protective of him. He had carried them home.
Just then there were noises from outside. It sounded like animals had gotten into the garage and toppled the garbage cans.
Zoe's mother stood.
Raccoons, she said. We're going to need a quick recess. No questions while I'm gone.
She turned her laptop to face the policeman.
If you have a problem with that, she said, you can take it up with LegalBeagle.com.
Would you like some help, Ms. Bizzle?
Asked Sergeant Volkmerson.
No, but thank you, Brian. The raccoons are just going to have to find a new place to play.
Zoe stood, her calves rippling with pain, and went to one of the duct-taped windows in the living room. Outside, the clouds had shifted. The moon was a bright, white eyeball in the sky. The mountains were just wavy lines receding into the distance. She felt weary for the thousandth time. She thought about Bert and Betty, about her father, about the big, roiling mess that everything had become. She thought about X. She knocked on the window. She didn't know why. He was out there somewhere. She shouldn't have let him go, but she couldn't exactly force him to stay. Zoe headed back to the table. She knew what she was going to say.
We didn't see anybody but Stan.
Why?
The moment Zoe said it, she knew she'd made a mistake. Miscalculated somehow. Even her mother seemed to know she was lying, but how could she?
Zoe's stomach tightened again, like someone was turning a wheel. Officer Mayers, she noticed, hadn't written her answer down. Not because he'd forgotten, but because he knew it would be used against her later. Zoe thought that was cool and kind. In her mind, she put a star next to Mayers' name, though she knew his little rebellion was about to get crushed.
Stuart, write down what our young friend just said, word for word.
This was Baldino. He smiled, drummed on the tabletop, and sat up straight. Now he looked merely 3 or 4 months pregnant, like he'd just begun telling people he was having a baby.
Brian, he said, let's show her the photo. You got it handy?
So there was a photo.
How could there be? And of what?
The wheel in Zoe's stomach turned 3 times in quick succession. She was about to speak when her mother startled everyone by slamming her computer shut.
What photo? She said. Why are we only hearing about it now? And why are you playing games with a 17-year-old girl?
I'm sorry, Miss Bissell, Volkmerson said, as he searched his phone for the picture.
Why on earth are you apologizing to this woman? Baldino said. We gave the kid a chance to tell the truth.
I accept your apology, Brian, said Zoe's mom.
But you, she was pointing at Chief Baldino now, are starting to piss me off.
It was the Instagram. Brian had an annoying daughter a couple of years behind Zoe at school, and the girl had seen the photo, thought it was hot, and left some lame comment like, "Yas!" She'd also shown it to her dad. The photo showed X from behind, his arms and legs spread so wide that he looked like an actual X. You could see his broad, shirtless back, lit by the glow coming off the ice. You could see the primitive tattoos running down his forearms. You could see Stan cowering miserably at his feet.
Now, there are many odd things about this photograph, said Chief Baldino. For instance, the lake is orange.
That's just a filter, said Mayers. Everybody uses them.
Zoe had stopped listening. She was staring not at X, but at Stan. Her mother was staring at him, too.
She seemed stunned to see him again after what must have been decades. The man was violent.